Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us today at Money Radio. Moro no país tropical, abençoado por Deus e bonito por natureza. Soy flamingo y tenho uma nega chamada Teresa. Alex Quadros, o meu convidado de hoje. Ele é o autor do livro Brazilianaires. Alex, bom dia.
Bom dia.
Nobody understood what I just said except for you probably, and I'm sorry if I messed it up quite a bit, but and I'm sure I did. My Portuguese is not very good, but here in the United States, hardly anyone speaks Portuguese, few anyway. There are probably some Brazilians laughing at my accent right there. Let me do the introduction so that people can actually know who you are. Your name is Alex Quadros. You are the author of a new book, Brazilianaires, Wealth, Power, Decadence, and Hope in an American Country. And you've been writing for several major publications, the Washington Post, New York Times, and it was Bloomberg that took you to Brazil. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You went to Brazil around 2010?
That's right, 2010, and it was an amazing time to arrive in Brazil because the economy was booming. That year, GDP grew by 7.5%. And it was really the peak of this time of euphoria about the country and its prospects for progress. So I landed there right in the middle of that.
There has always been this attitude in Brazil of, it's right on the cusp. It's just about to become a major player in the world economic scene, and it's going to happen maybe next year. And in 2010, it was almost looking like it would happen.
Right. The cliche that probably a lot of people have heard is that Brazil is the country of the future and always will be. And this is a saying that Brazilians themselves invented. You know, they have a kind of pessimism, but good humor about their seeming inability to ever quite reach developed nation status. But yeah, at the time, it really looked like Brazil was turning the corner and was about to become a world player. More than 30 million people had been lifted from extreme poverty, largely through social programs. There was this amazing commodities boom driven by the growth of China, and Brazil, the major commodities exporter. So the country seemed like, and not only seemed like, it was becoming a larger and larger piece of the world economy. And from having been just a few years earlier the world's 13th largest economy, by 2010, it was the world's seventh largest, and people thought that any day now it would be the world's fifth largest.
A lot of that came about under the administration of Lula da Silva, and there were many programs, for example, Bolsa Família, that lifted people out of poverty, or at least helped. And there has been extreme poverty in Brazil for quite some time, and there still is now. But in addition to lifting people out of poverty, one of the side effects was that there were also people who were lifted into the stratosphere of great wealth. And all of a sudden, there were multi-billionaires all around Brazil, or as you refer to them, Brazilianaires, the title of the book. How were these Brazilianaires treated? It seems as if in some ways they really kind of became national heroes. But there's some tragedy in these stories as well.
Yeah, well, Brazil is, as you said, a deeply unequal country, and it always has been. And during this amazing boom about 10 years ago, a lot of poor people got less poor, but a lot of rich people got a lot richer. So inequality that didn't actually diminish much. But as you say, one of the corollaries of this amazing economic growth was that Brazil produced all of these billionaires. And so, for example, during this time, a trio of billionaires from Rio de Janeiro, one of whom is now Brazil's richest man, Jorge Paulo Lehmann, came to own Anheuser-Busch InBev, which makes Budweiser, Burger King, Heinz, and now Kraft. So they conquered these, you know, storied American brands, and that was really a sign of Brazil's newfound economic might. But there was a sort of interesting contradiction in the rise of these people, because at the same time that it represented Brazil's progress as an economy, a lot of the fortunes were built through not very clean methods. So some of the richest families in the country that became unbelievably rich during these years were in the construction business. And they made their money through connections with the government and often through outright bribery. And a lot of this bribery, you know, everyone kind of knew it was happening, but it's been exposed systematically in recent years in this massive corruption scandal that never seems to end.
Operation Car Wash is the one that people may have heard of that has exposed a great deal of the corruption and brought down the president. After Lula da Silva, it was Dilma Rousseff. And she has now been impeached. Maybe some folks have heard about that, but they may not realize that the vice president who took over, Michel Temer, is also under investigation for all sorts of things. And essentially the Speaker of the House also under investigation, and the mayor of Rio de Janeiro, and on and on and on. Basically, legislators all through the government are under investigation for corruption. It's massive and widespread.
Right. Dilma has been definitively impeached. Michel Temer was sworn in as president, but like you said, corruption is absolutely systemic in Brazil's political system. And the sort of bitter irony of the impeachment of Dilma Rousseff is that, yes, her government was deeply involved in corruption. But while the movement to remove her from office had the fight against corruption as one of its main banners, the people who kicked her out and who took over are just as deeply involved in this massive corruption scheme that's been uncovered. Michel Temer, who was her vice president and turned against her, his party was Dilma's Workers' Party's main partner in the corruption scheme at the state oil company. And there is good evidence, secret recordings emerged showing that some of Temer's top allies thought that the best way to kind of throw up a smoke screen so that they could undermine the corruption investigations before they too would be removed from power or possibly go to jail was to impeach Dilma Rousseff. So, you know, it wasn't quite as black and white as one might think following from afar.
Dilma called it a coup, was it?
It was not a coup. It followed the letter of constitutional rules. And, you know, as we've just seen in the United States, where one candidate won the popular vote but lost the electoral vote, there are gray areas in democracy. What happened in Brazil, I think, can be classified as such. But the fact is that Dilma Rousseff herself was not involved in corruption. She violated budget rules, sort of arcane rules that no one in the country really fully understands. And the fact is that a lot of people see the impeachment as illegitimate. A former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court called it an impeachment tabajada, which tabajada is like the Brazilian version of ACME. So, you know, kind of a fake impeachment, kind of a show of following the rules in order to basically kick someone out of power.
Meanwhile, Lula was at one point arrested for possible involvement in Operation Car Wash. He was released, but I believe he's still facing some investigation there. What is the fate of Dilma and Lula?
Well, there's been no evidence to show that Dilma had any personal involvement in corruption or received any personal favors or bribes. The situation is a little more complex in Lula's case. He, after leaving the presidency, he started to earn tens of millions of dollars by giving speeches to a variety of companies, but especially for the construction companies that were at the heart of the corruption scheme at the state oil company. He would go and give a talk in a foreign country, get paid a bunch of money, and then coincidentally while there would lobby foreign leaders to hire these companies to do projects in their countries. Investigators think that Lula may have also had a role in pressuring Brazil's State Development Bank to give these companies low-interest loans that they could carry out these projects. So he has definitely gotten rich. You know, the question is whether that constitutes bribery and corruption, and whether they can prove a quid pro quo. And he's also received some other little favors. And it seems difficult at this point, just because of the size of the scheme and how integral it was to ensuring support from the congressman and Lula's coalition. It seems hard to say that, you know, he knew nothing about it.
What's the future for Lula and for Dilma?
I get the sense that Lula will probably be convicted of some kind of crime. The team that's working on this corruption scheme, the Lava Jato or Car Wash team, have been working very hard to show the benefits that he has received and tie him to this corruption scheme. And that would basically take him out of the political game, because he, even after being president for two terms and away from politics for 8 years and possibly involved in all these scandals, he's still cited as a possible name to run for the presidency in 2018. And that would kind of dash his chances. Dilma, I think I don't think much is going to happen with her. She seems to be leading a quiet life for now, and may continue to do so.
Very, very quick answer before we break here. The legislature, the executive branch, seem dirty as can be. What about the judicial? Are they clean?
Not completely. No, there's definitely corruption throughout the judiciary as well. But at the highest levels in the Supreme Court, that does not seem to be the case, at least.
We'll continue the conversation with Alex Quadros. The book is Brazilianaires, and believe me, it is an intriguing story. It's a wild story at times, but it does affect us. If you've had Kraft macaroni and cheese, Heinz ketchup, or Budweiser, you need to know where it came from. And it turns out it's Brazil. More in a moment. Thanks so much for joining us. Our guest is Alex Quadros. The book Brazilianaires is an intriguing story about Brazilian billionaires. Alex, we've been talking a lot about the political situation down in Brazil, which is tied to the big money interest in Brazil. There was a lot of corruption going on, and there seemed to be a lot of back scratching going on, and that's probably the kindest term that I could use. But a lot of us aren't really familiar with the Brazilian billionaires themselves. And I think probably one place to start is the story of Ike Batista.
Yes, he's definitely the most colorful of all of these characters. When I got to Brazil in 2010, he was the country's richest man. At the time, he was worth $30 billion. He was the world's eighth richest man. And he really loved to show off his wealth. He would invite reporters to his mansion in Rio, where he kept a Mercedes-Benz SLR McLaren in one of his living rooms. He loved to show off his yachts and jets. He was a champion speedboat racer. He very famously bought for himself a $30,000 wig, basically, and proudly showed it off. He was married to a former Playboy cover girl and carnival queen. If you can imagine a sort of cliche of a billionaire South American playboy, he was it. But he was also an incredibly relevant figure to the country and this amazing boom that it was having in the economy. He showed up on the scene with all of these startups in oil and mining. He was going to build this super port, and his ambition was actually to help turn his country into a modern superpower.
And then just a few short years later, he basically lost almost all of that $30 billion. It's quite incredible.
That's right. I mean, he became incredibly rich very fast, and then he lost it all even faster. So he went from having a fortune of $30 billion to not even being a billionaire anymore in about a year and a half. And basically, he had held all of these IPOs of these natural resource startups saying that, you know, they were going to produce as much oil as the nation of Oman, you know, in 10 years or something.
And his son Thor, was also arrested for, I believe it was vehicular manslaughter, something along those lines, basically driving a McLaren along a mountain road, ran into some poor young kid on a bicycle, killed him. And so there was that story that overwhelmed Brazilian media for quite some time. The rich, spoiled kid in a McLaren killing a poor kid on a bike. And that's kind of a metaphor for the inequality that was going on in Brazil. And then Ike, also under investigation himself for corruption, I believe.
He's facing trial for insider trading and market manipulation, and has been cited in the car wash investigations as well. Yeah, I mean, his fall from grace couldn't have been more dramatic in every way.
And that's just one of the Brazilianaires. There are another 20 or so Brazilianaires?
Yeah, I talk about less than a dozen in detail, but there are others who kind of cycle through. But it's an amazing bunch of characters. And, you know, I was never a billionaire enthusiast or anything. I kind of fell into this job very randomly when Bloomberg asked me to join this team of journalists to cover the world's billionaires. But it was these amazing personalities and the realization that they were really integral to the way the country worked and really the way the world worked that got me so fascinated in the topic.
Well, I doubt you could have dreamed up these characters on your own. Even if you were writing for a novella, I don't think you could have come up with some of these characters. It's an incredible story. Brazilianaires, wealth, power, decadence, and hope in an American country. Brazilianaires by Alex Quadros. Alex, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.